You are listening to another presentation from the Environment Institute at the University of Adelaide.
Ladies and gentlemen, imagine. As we progress through the next 25 years, we continue to see an amazing change in the goods and services that surround us. Fully portable video communication, smaller, lightweight, highly energy efficient transport systems, information systems with instant global connections, and medical interventions that make bionic and gene modification an everyday procedure. But these are the trappings and externalities surrounding us, while the underlying needs of people will remain the same as they are now. The need for shelter and security, the need for quality water, food and clothing, and the need for a sense of purpose and place. At this fundamental level, our intimate dependence on the Earth's natural resources is clear. Our connection with the Earth and its condition is critical to our condition. Our Indigenous cultures appreciated this connection, while we, the products of the Industrial Revolution, or more particularly, we of the fossil fuel generations, have mostly given fleeting and scant attention. Imagine that we begin to act now in a systematic and structured way to modify what we do on the landscape, how we do it, and where we do it. We do not wait for a crippling crisis, but rather we identify that we value the landscape, what we value in the surrounding natural resources, and what personal and social attributes of our place we want to maintain and enhance. Imagine that we anticipate a warmer, drier climate and we start to adjust our thinking and our attitudes. We help our communities gather an appreciation of how we might change. And we foster and encourage a cohort of people who can guide these on-ground changes that are needed to adapt. Imagine a landscape that has a mosaic of land use, with production areas suited to the most productive and responsive areas. We've moved away from the old practice of farming on the average to farming within paddock land capability. We have different land use activities which now include a mix of endemic perennial vegetation that has become part of a whole farm energy and carbon asset accounting. A new appreciation has developed for the importance of maintaining soil health with cover and carbon turnover. We've become cognizant that healthy soils, healthy vegetation, and biodiverse ecosystems are critical for clean water, for waste recycling, and for our sense of stewardship. We now plan our grazing, cropping, and conservation vegetation management in the full knowledge that this is the most significant environmental effect we have on energy, carbon, water, and nutrient balances of the landscape. Imagine among the land use mosaic, there is a deliberately retained set of endemic ecosystems that are large and connected enough that they can be maintained for the foreseeable future. The region has become renowned in an ever-crowded world as a significant visitor destination because it retains a character that was not rolled over by the great push for global sameness in the early 2000s. The region is also renowned for the diversity of enterprises, which, like the ecosystems it has sought to retain, bestows a regional resilience, a buffering to the inevitable variability of seasonal conditions, of commodity prices and consumer preferences. Some communities in the regions have emerged through a stressful period of consolidation, but now pride themselves on being strongly self-sustaining. People within the communities have a common sense of well-being that has come from a well-planned development of their own capacity and the confidence that they can readily identify where to source support and advice. Imagine that as a result of some far-sighted and visionary leadership 25 years ago, there was a well-planned and monitored program that brought together the governance and institutional organisations, public and private, which empowered the regional planners and implementers. An important part of that visionary program was to increase the information and analysis linkages to understand the big global influences. There was a deliberate process to link with and learn from national projects that were relevant to the region, and there was also an innovative consultative and extension effort that won the support of land users. Ladies and gentlemen, the Climate Change Community Environment Project is about setting us on a course that helps realise that vision. I believe that by gathering what we know about the resources, identifying the key driving biophysical, economic and social processes, and bringing this into a regional learning interaction, that we can help regional adaptation. What we learned from a previous project, the Lower Murray Landscape Futures, was that the land use decisions made today were the ones that determined what the landscape looked like and how well it functioned into the future. Those decisions of land use were more influential than any of the effects we could forecast from likely climate change or commodity changes. In other words, our decisions determine what the landscape looks like and how well it functions. We have that responsibility. So my project team aims to assess the impacts of a range of climate adaptation options. What we'll do is look through modelling biophysical impacts, including water, carbon, nutrients and biodiversity under some changed climate conditions. We'll quantify the economic and social impacts such as income, jobs and food and energy security. And we'll provide alternative, spatially explicit policy and management options which increase resilience and reduce climate change vulnerability of our regional social ecological systems, that connected system that Brian talked about. We expect to develop the understanding, expertise and tools that result in more evidence-based planning and implementation of regional natural resource management. The net result will be more effective, cost-effective conservation and more resilient, viable regional communities. We want to be leading the push for South Australia's adaptive capacity. I want to acknowledge the partners in this project, the Premier Science and Research Council, the University of Adelaide, CSIRO Climate Adaptation Flagship, South Australian Government Agencies, Department of Waterland and Biodiversity Conservation, Primary Industries and Resources, SARDI, and Department of Environment for Environment and Heritage, and the two NRM regions, South Australian Murray-Darling Basin and Eyre Peninsula. I'd like to thank the advisory group that we've assembled. Look forward to working with them over the next 2.5 years. And the people on the advisory group, Roger Wicks from the NRM Council, Patrick O'Connor, an NRM consultant, Barry Brook from the University, John Johnson and Sheridan Ulm from the MDB NRM board, Kate Clark and Cecilia Woolford, Cecilia's here this evening, from the Eyre Peninsula MDB board. And finally, acknowledge the input from the management group, Brett Bryan, Andrew Fisher, Brett from CSIRO, Andrew from DWLBC, Michael Cutting from the SAMDB board, Steph Williams from Department of Environment and Heritage, Peter Heyman from SARDI, Megan Lewis from the University, and Mark Stanley from the Eyre Peninsula NRM board. And particularly welcome our two postdoc appointees, Dave Summers and Greg Lyle, and I invite you to meet with them in our period afterwards. So I thank you for your interest and your support. Thank you all for coming, and make the most of the opportunity to meet with people and to particularly to meet with the project team. Thanks very much for coming.
For more information on the Environment Institute, visit www.adelaide.edu.au/environment. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, feed.theenvironmentinstitute.com.